morning is Verkhylen against Mediabank. Mr. Wasserman.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Matt Wasserman. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff, Penny Verkhylen, appellant. In this case, the district court erred in finding that Verkhylen was properly classified as meeting the administrative exemption to the FLSA. The evidence in the record establishes that Verkhylen provided one of the commodities, MediaBank, the defendant.
Problem is, you haven't given us any evidence about MediaBank's product, the complexity of it, the nature of her relations with these customers and so on, the training sessions. You treat it as if she were responding to customer complaints about sale of some conventional product. This is very complicated software.
This software, while it may be complicated,
it's not a maybe. It is very complicated software.
The plaintiff, her job duties with respect to that software were limited, and the record reflects that. The plaintiff's...
Well, of course they're limited. The question is what they were exactly. You know, how much time she spends with... It's hard to keep track. How do you deal with overtime with people who are... who are at the customer's premises far away? How do you you don't punch a time clock. You just don't give a picture of what is actually she doing, how much does she have to know, you know?
The FLSA has a presumption that the plaintiff is not exempt, and it is the defendant's burden to rebut that presumption.
Well, that doesn't. That's
and in the plaintiff's
so
duties.
So the CEO would be a presumption that he's an hourly employee and then he has to rebut it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the defendant.
Well, that's ridiculous.
But he's specifically, his job duties are specifically denoted in the Code of Federal Regulations as being exempt from the overtime provisions. The things that he is doing is distinguished from the things that the plaintiff is doing, and the record is clear on that point. The plaintiff was a frontline employee providing training and support to users of the software, whereas the CEO is a back office employee. That's a clear distinction that the district court should have made and didn't make. You have a back office employee, that's an administrative employee. You have a frontline employee like the plaintiff.
Of course, people who teach are not hourly employees, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Teachers are not. They're professionals, right? If she does training and if she, you know, helps diagnose problems and she connects the developers with the customers and so on, that doesn't sound like typical hourly work.
What it is, according to the DOL and several court opinions...
I just wish you had more, you know, tell us more about the software. If you look at the website of MediaBank, look at their description of the software, it looks really complicated. It's not like helping someone install email on his computer or something like that. You have all this budgetary material integrated with a different ordering from different companies of this and that. It's very complicated. It's a very complicated screen you look at, apparently, as near as I can figure out from the website.
It was not the plaintiff's job to design the software. It was only the plaintiff's job
to
assist the users.
Well, of course not, but people who design software are not the only people who are exempt from the FLSA.
The DOL has examined situations and employees with very similar job duties.
I don't know how you can call it very similar when you haven't told us what her job is.
To the record, the only evidence in the record as to her specific job duties is her...
Why did you put in some evidence in the record, then, about her job?
The evidence in the record that the plaintiff put in the record, from our perspective, is sufficient to show that she did not perform exempt duties. And to the extent that she did perform any duties that could be deemed exempt, they weren't her primary duty. The record and the defendants have the burden to prove that
her primary
duty is exempt.
But all you have is your job description, right?
her job description?
You didn't present any evidence of what she actually does, although presumably she would know that.
Well, that's not true, Your Honor. We do have evidence in the record of her specific job duties, and there's no dispute that her specific job duties changed throughout her employment. And that's one of the problems in this case and one of the problems with the district court's decision. The court needs to find what her primary duty is, and they haven't done that. The court has not done that. And it must first find that her primary duty is directly related to the running or servicing of the business. It has not and cannot do that because the record only shows lots of different duties, not a primary duty. As Your Honor correctly pointed out, there isn't anything in the record to show how much time she spent performing any one duty over another. The same issue applies when you consider her discretion.
The regulation is very badly drafted, but what they give is an example of covered work as opposed to what they call administrative work, which is very misleading, is working on a manufacturing production line or selling a product in a retail or service establishment. That seems pretty remote from what she does.
That description has been interpreted by courts to mean that the employee, if they are to fall on the production side of the dichotomy, is providing a good or service, or as I've articulated, a commodity that the company provides to its customers. That's exactly what the plaintiff did in this case. She didn't do the back office functions.
What's the distinction between the back office and the front office? Are you saying that anybody who deals with customers is not exempt, but somebody who's in the back office is exempt?
No, not necessarily. The test is what they were actually doing. And the distinction that I'm trying to draw is that you have a employee in this case who was providing the software and training, not making decisions about how the business should provide it or what the short and long-term planning for the business would be or how it's going to negotiate with its customers.
Why should that make a difference?
All of those items.
Do you have any idea what policy lies behind these distinctions?
The policy that lies behind these distinctions, in my view, is in order to allow the employers to define what employees should or shouldn't be classified as exempt.
Why do some people get overtime protection, others not?
Well, I can only speak as to what should have happened in this case.
No, that's not true. You ought to have some sense of what the purpose of the statute is.
The purpose of the statute is to pay employees that are doing hourly related work that doesn't have the discretion
Why is that a distinction relevant to whether you get time and a half or overtime?
Well, to the extent that an employee has this discretion, they're often being paid more, and they have...
What was her salary? Her salary, she had a good salary, didn't she?
She was not paid the threshold $100,000 under the FLSA. She was paid less than that, and she, as the evidence reflects in the record...
The threshold is pretty misleading. You're not saying that everybody who doesn't earn $100,000 is protected, gets time and a half overtime, are you?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that in this case, the plaintiff didn't perform the duties that were required in order for her to be classified as exempt.
But you refuse to answer my question. Why do you think some people get overtime, get this overtime protection, others don't?
I think that the concept is to distinguish between an employee that has a certain level of effect on the business operations versus an employee that's simply providing the service.
But why make that distinction?
Because I don't know an effective answer for that. I can simply say that that's the way that the Act is applied, and that's how it should have been applied in this case.
FLSA was a depression measure to deal with the fact that hourly workers had horrendous unemployment experience during the Depression, whereas college-educated people, people in services and so on, did fine. And she's remote from the sort of person that we think of as in need of this kind of minimum wage and and overtime protection.
If Your Honors take that...
She's a high class, not technically, I guess, a professional, but that's what she is.
If Your Honors...
This is professional work. Very few people could do this kind of work. Her background is in advertising. It's not in, you know, retail selling or answering customers' complaints. She's an expert in advertising.
I don't think it's fair to classify her as an expert. I also don't think that the record reflects that she was more qualified than somebody else to do this, or that this is a very complex position.
Well, you couldn't do it, that's for sure.
Maybe I couldn't do it, but that's not my... That's not
an
issue.
You need to have a background. You need to have a background in marketing. You need to know a fair amount about software, and you need to be comfortable with complex software systems, because they're going to ask you questions about it. They're going to have bugs, and you're going to have to explain all this to the developers.
Your Honor,
which is difficult.
That evidence is not in the record. What's in the record is that the only thing that MediaBank cared about was whether the person had a college degree. The evidence that is in the record.
Now wait a second. You're saying anybody with a college degree could have done this job?
I'm saying that's what the record says.
Is that what you're saying?
No. What I'm suggesting.
Well, what are you saying? You just said all they cared about was a college degree.
What I'm saying is this is a case that's up on appeal on a summary judgment, and we have to deal with the record that's presented. And in this case, the record that's presented says, according to Bouchard, that they cared about a college degree, an educated employee, and then the record reflects that the plaintiff...
They didn't care about the fact that she had a marketing background?
They may have, but it's not in the record. And what is in the record is that she was trained on this software.
Use a little common sense? I mean, how could she do this job without a marketing background?
Even if she had the marketing background that they... or they wanted a marketing background, it doesn't make her exempt. And in order to... If this court were to affirm the district court, it would effectively... tell the district courts and employers and the Department of Labor that its prior decisions are wrong. You've got Department of Labor decisions which, in our view, after having done research throughout the DOL opinions, you have employees that are very similar to the employee in this case who are being found to be not exempt. The same should have happened here. And if this court chooses to affirm...
What's your best case? What's the closest to her work?
You've got three. We've cited
one. What's your best?
The best would be the.
I don't care about the name. What is the type of work we're involved in? It was closest to hers.
Computer employees who aid users in the operation and troubleshooting of computer programs.
So that's like a repairman.
Well, it's no different than the plaintiff in the sense that she's assisting users and training. And troubleshooting how to use this software.
A back office job?
No, that's a frontline job in this circumstance with this employer. That's a service.
You were saying you had to be in the back office to be exempt.
I am. In this sense, I am. And this DOL opinion that I just referenced is an opinion where they found that the employee is not exempt, just like they should have in this case. The person that provided the training and support and aided users in the operation of the program was found not exempt, and they consistently found not exempt. And what I'm suggesting is that's what the district court should have found. And if this court affirms the district court, it's essentially saying that the DOL's wrong, and the DOL's been wrong for 10 or more years. I see them in my rebuttal. If there aren't any further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder.
Certainly, Mr. Wasserman.
Thank you.
Miller.
May it please the court. My name is Matt Miller. I represent MediaBank in this case. I think a good place to start would be to look at some points on which the parties actually agree about what the plaintiff's job consisted of. There is some development of her job in the record, and there are some remarkable points of agreement. All parties agree that the plaintiff in this case was the client-facing person in this company. All account managers, that's who interfaces with the client. What counsel calls the frontline job, but the cases from this circuit make clear that those sorts of jobs, client-facing jobs,
that sounds like some hideous jargon. What does that mean?
Well, it means that when a client has an issue,
that she works doesn't turn her back to the clients.
No. What Mr. Bouchard was explaining is when a client has an issue,
she works with clients, yes. Right?
client. And the only one works with clients. So if the software is not working for the client's not going to call a 1-800 number and get some tech support. They're going to call the plaintiff or some other account manager. It's the only person the client's going to see. That's what Mr. Bouchard was explaining when he used that term. It is jargon. It's his jargon. But whatever the client has, whatever comes up, that's who they're going to call. It then becomes her job, and the parties agree, to decide what is the problem. Can she solve it on her own, or does she have to send it to somebody else? She makes that decision on her own, needs to consult no one. She agrees that she conducts training sessions with clients, that she develops herself with no oversight. She conducts training sessions for other employees who are newer to the job.
Is there any information what these training sessions consist of?
Well, the software is complicated, as you pointed out in the questioning. And what the training consists of is, so if a user, this is to the advertising world, and the software is designed to help them purchase advertising so they can target their buys.
Right.
What she does in the training is she assists the users in understanding how to use it.
But, is this sort of a classroom thing, or is she just answering their questions?
She gets to decide that. It can be either or. If it's a simple question, she'll just answer it. If there's a group of people that are having difficulty inputting either the bills or tracking the bills or inputting the right criteria to get the right results, she might have a classroom setting. She might decide to do that at MediaBank, or she might decide to do that on premises with the client, as she did towards the latter part of her career with MediaBank. So it really depends, and she gets to make that call, which is a classic discretionary function, which is another reason that makes her exempt. There's a detailed job description, which the plaintiff agreed in deposition, by and large, accurately described her job. And it discusses independent thinking, independent judgment, discretion, the need to be able to decide things on her own. These points are not really in dispute. What the plaintiff does to try to run from those facts, which aren't disputed, is focus on what she did not do, as if there's some list, and if you miss one, you're all of a sudden no longer exempt. So plaintiff says she didn't sign contracts with customers, and that's true. It's not a requirement. And we ought not be focusing on what she did not do, but instead on what she did do. And that's what this court has done in cases like Haywood, in cases like Roe Midget, and the Kennedy case. All cases that the parties also agree are the cases from this circuit that apply. So we agree on what the facts are. We also agree on what the applicable case law is from this circuit. Plaintiff goes to these Department of Labor letters and a Sixth Circuit case and a District of Maryland case. We don't need to do any of that because the law here is fairly well developed. But those cases don't help her anyway. The Department of Labor letter cases, the Sixth District case, I think it's the Martin case, the District of Maryland case, these involve what the courts called IT support specialists. Same thing in the Department of Labor letters. They'll plug in a network, make sure the network's working for their company. That's not at all the job here. That doesn't involve any of the sort of discretionary tasks that are involved here. Those don't touch on the important aspects of the business as it does in this case. So we don't need to go to those cases, but they also don't help. I think the cases that most help, and the one that we relied on heavily in the district court and that Judge Grady relied on, is the Haywood case, where you had an employee who was in customer service for a moving company.
You're telling us this is basically a matter of how much discretion does this employee have?
Well, discretion's a significant part of the equation. But I do think that something that we should focus on, and I do think that the plaintiff in this case exercised the discretion necessary to meet one of the three criteria.
The opponent says it all matters whether you're in the back office or up front.
And I think that's just wrong. And I think the cases from this circuit show that that's wrong. I mean, in Haywood, again, they go to
criteria, it seems to me.
Well, I don't know where that criteria comes from. It doesn't come from the case law, and it doesn't come from the regulations, as best as I can tell. It doesn't matter where you work. It matters what you do. And so in Haywood, for example, I'll come back to that case, that employee is not in the back office. That employee is out in the front lines, picking up the phone, talking to customers, making sure they're happy. If the customers aren't happy, and with that moving company, she would deal with damage claims, loss claims, delay claims, then the business doesn't work. So I don't know where this back office, front office comes from, but it's not the law. It shouldn't be the law. It's just wrong. We have to look at what a person does, not where they do it. And what the plaintiff did in this case was exercise discretion on matters of importance, and she's really on all points with what would be an exempt employee. You know, unless the panel has other questions, I think our matters are fairly well laid out in our briefs, and if there aren't any other questions, we would just ask that the district court be affirmed in its decision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Anything further, Mr. Wasserman?
Thank you, Your Honors. I think there's some confusion as to this back office and discretion. There's two different elements to this test. There's the primary duty test, which is a determination of what she actually did and what her primary duty was. And then the second part of the test is whether she exercised discretion with respect to matters of significance. The point that we're trying to convey is that, one, her primary duty is not defined. Her main, most important duty is not defined in the record. There's just a bunch of evidence in the record about all of her duties. So you can't get past that first part of the test. The defendants haven't met their burden as to that first part of the test. If you can get past that first part of the test, when you get to the second part of the test as to discretion, the defendants have to show, not the plaintiff, the defendants have to show, because there's a presumption that the plaintiff didn't
exercise.
What
do you think was her primary duty?
Her primary duty changed. That's what I think. And
well,
I think the record says that.
Didn't answer my question. So maybe she had two different primary duties at different times. So what were they, in your view?
If we had to characterize her primary duties,
well,
despite the fact that they changed,
right?
I would suggest that her primary duty was to provide training and support to users of the software, which the DOL and the cases that we cite specifically show this is a non-exempt activity. And I believe Haywood, which is before this circuit, decided by this circuit, makes that very clear. There's a key distinction between Haywood in this case. Haywood could bind the company, could resolve disputes between the company's clients and the company. The plaintiff in this case had no ability to even consider dealing with a contract, let alone resolve a dispute with a customer. The plaintiff in this case was simply dealing with a user, not the customer that negotiated the contract with MediaBank, not the customer who was upset about what was going on with their relationship with MediaBank. The Haywood case only makes it clear that the plaintiff in this case is not exempt. Unless there are further questions, thank you for your time, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case.